here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello. Happy New Year. Welcome back to the Zach's Friday Finish Line. I'm Ryan McQueenie, an associate stock strategist here at Zach's, along with one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
Hi. Today is Friday, January 4th, officially
2019.
The new year. Officially 2019. And we're here, as always, to recap this week's biggest stories in the investment and financial world. We've really packed the storylines into these shortened holiday weeks, it feels like.
Yeah.
Nothing's really slowed down, even though I have no desire to do anything.
Yeah.
I feel like no one else has any desire to do anything.
Yeah.
But the world around us has, especially the U.S. government, despite their shutdown. So the shutdown has raged on, and Congress just switched over to the new cast. They were sworn in yesterday. And stocks continue to whipsaw on conflicting sentiment.
It's very right, and we've got it all here for you today on the very first Finish Line of the new year. We're just going to go ahead and start with the must-know macroeconomic data from the past few days. Kind of mixed reads Thursday and Friday, conflicting opinions, if you will.
Yes.
And we'll start with, I guess, chronological order then. So we'll start with Thursday and the latest from the manufacturing sector.
Yes. So while this macroeconomic stuff is not like the most riveting, it's very important.
Yes.
And can impact the market hugely.
Yeah, it's almost one of those, you know, kind of scale. It's not a logarithmic scale, but it's one of those sloping things where the more boring something gets, the more important it ends up being.
Exactly.
So we don't
like in school. Like the more boring it is, yeah, like the more likely it's going to show up on the exam and the more you should study it.
Yes. I don't get out of bed every day excited to hear about the latest in the ISM manufacturing index. But as it turns out, we end up covering a lot because it's very, very important data.
So this week, the ISM index was one of the few things causing volatility, especially on Thursday.
Hint, we're going to cover the other thing later in the show.
With December's read on manufacturing activity showing the slowest growth in 2 years, thanks to sluggish demand for new products. The ISM said its manufacturing gauge fell to 54.1 last month, down from 59.3 in November, and well below estimates of 57. The only other times that the index has fallen that sharply month over month were directly after the Lehman Brothers failure in 2008, not great, and after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. So the index has been around the 60 range for about a year and a half now. The most troubling component of December's ISM read was new orders, which dropped 11 points to 51.1, its weakest level since August 2016. So
this is another one of those things where we had to clarify that slowest growth does not mean recession or contraction. It's just one of these things where
it's just a slowdown.
Yes. And so that's the interesting part about it. Anything above 50 on the ISM is growth in some capacity.
Yeah.
But to see growth slow down so sharply in such a short period of time, I think people were like, whoa.
But it's also like what's been going on with the market. When you see slowdown, that's still scary.
Yes.
And especially when in comparison to the Lehman Brothers failure in 08 and the 9/11 attacks back in 01, when you like put that in comparison to those two major events, it's just like then like minds start rolling and you're like, oh, whoa.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think this was also a confirmation, if you will, but kind of another example of, okay, well, you know, this trade war is really starting to have its effects.
Mm-hmm.
This is the type of gauge where the effects would show up in. Although, you know, I think the counter argument to that would be the ISM manufacturing index was a much more useful indicator of the pace of growth in the economy when we were a manufacturing economy, which
that's a good point.
We are no longer these days. So it carries a little bit less weight in our culture now than it did in the past. But as you can see, like, what we've just gone back and forth with four different ways to interpret this. So, you know, it definitely put pressure on stocks because the people interpreting this as a negative certainly won out on Thursday. But
it's like that now we just like Justin Bieber song playing, "What Do You Mean?" Yeah. Like over and over and over again, you know.
And then as we were hinting at earlier, we got kind of a conflicting data point, a really good data point on Friday morning, which was the latest BLS jobs report, Bureau of Labor Statistics, unaffected by the government shutdown, and still pumping out these reports, which we are very thankful for. And it was very good report for December. U.S. employers, added 312,000 jobs in December. That was well above what analysts expected, which was around 177,000. Just blew the estimates out of the water there. And even better, revisions to past months were also strong. November's jobs growth was bumped up from 155K to 176K, and October was revised from 237K to 274K. Strong revisions, especially that November number, seeing a bump higher is good to see because that wasn't a great number, that missed estimates, that November read. Looking back now, we have job gains at an average of 254,000 per month over the past 3 months, which is pretty freaking good. Average hourly earnings rose 11 cents per hour in December. That was good for 0.4% month over month growth and about 3.2% year over year growth. We've been on about 3.1% over the past 11 or 12 months. So anything within this 2.9 to 3.2% year over year growth range is right where we've been, maybe 3.1, 3.2, getting a little hotter even. This is a double-edged sword because it's like great that people are making more money, especially because wage growth over the past decade or so hasn't been quite what we'd want it to be. It's double-edged sword though, because then we get worried about inflation. This is one of a number of things that go into inflation, but certainly something people are talking about today. But the big thing here, and maybe the surprise, was labor force participation rate. That figure rose to 63.1% from 62.9%, and this is a five-year high. So this is the way that we measure how many people are actively trying to be involved in the labor force. So this actually made the unemployment rate go up. The unemployment rate rose 20 basis points to 3.9%. Mostly because the participation rate increased. And the unemployment rate going up a little bit actually isn't a bad thing, because it's indicating that along with that participation rate going up, it's indicating that higher wages, or at least it's hinting that these higher wages that we're now starting to see, is convincing some people who had previously given up on trying to be in the labor force to come out and actually look for jobs and seek new opportunities, which is something that when you're at below 4% employment, which is near this full employment situation, you really need to see that. Employers are going to struggle to find people at some point,
right?
Unless these people come out. So that's a really good thing. And I think the other positive was that this was pretty widespread jobs growth. Construction, manufacturing, healthcare, and leisure and hospitality all posted gains of more than 30,000 jobs last month, which is solid, because, you know, one of the other counter arguments with these is, well, sure, a lot of people have jobs, but it's a ton of these low paying jobs in leisure, and it's a ton of these low paying service jobs, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But when you have construction, manufacturing, and healthcare also adding jobs, that argument doesn't hold as much weight. So
yeah, definitely.
Not so great ISM manufacturing index, a pretty great jobs report. The bulls and bears duking it out on which one matters the most. We had what seemed like a pretty strong win for the bear case, though, on Thursday as well, from one of the most important companies in the world, one of the largest companies in the world, and that was a very rare note of caution from none other than Apple.
Yes, Apple. And you know, it's a big financial story or important enough when it starts showing up on morning television.
Yeah.
So
like Good Morning America.
Like Good Morning America.
Great point.
They talked about it today. They had their business correspondent. I don't know her name off the top of my head, but they're like, what just happened with Apple?
With Apple.
Or when the Dow plummeted like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, they like brought her on again. Like any of like these big stories when it just like plummets or when it rebounded. Mm-hmm. Like 1,000 points, they bring her on again.
Right.
So when it's big enough where like the common public notices,
yeah,
it'll show up on like the Today Show or GMA. This happened. Like,
yes.
So
I would love to. We could do a little bit of research on whether Good Morning America mentioning the story is a bullish or bearish indicator going forward.
Yeah, no.
Does that mean the bottom is in once GMA is paying attention?
Because you know, it's just like, well, like I like to have it on in the background when I'm getting ready for work.
Yeah, it's a great, I think that's everybody who watches Good Morning America.
Yeah, or then it's like, you know, random, like everyday people, like across the country, whether it is like the CBS morning show, whatever, whoever. But when it's that big enough, they tend to cover it. So, like you said, Apple, not a great Thursday, but it really started late Wednesday afternoon when Apple CEO Tim Cook, in a letter to investors, the company revised the firm's fiscal first quarter 2019 revenue guidance to roughly $84 billion. So this marked an approximately 6% or $5 billion downturn from the low end of Apple's previous quarterly outlook. This is rare. They don't tend to revise.
Exceedingly rare.
It's
because they tend to have really good quarters.
They do. They tend to usually, you know, always crush it.
Yeah.
More or less, always, like mostly across the board, they tend to do well. But the move marked the first time in over 15 years that Apple lowered its quarterly guidance. Apple pointed to a difference in iPhone launch timing, as well as a strong U.S. dollar and supply constraints as reasons for its lowered guidance. But the biggest issue in the quarter, according to Tim Cook, were slower sales in emerging markets, particularly China. China. Cook said that the slowing Chinese economy and the impact of the continuous trade war between the world's two largest economies led to poor sales. Quote, while we anticipated some challenges in key emerging markets, we did not foresee the magnitude of the economic deceleration, particularly in Greater China, unquote. That's what he said in his investor letter. Cook would further elaborate that most of the shortfall to previous guidance and over 100% of the year-over-year revenue decline can be blamed on weak sales in China. Not a great day for Apple. But when something like this happens with a company like Apple, one of the biggest companies in the world, it doesn't just affect Apple.
Yeah.
It affects clearly the entire stock market.
Yeah.
The greater tech stocks, people start paying attention, and people take note.
Yeah. And that's for several reasons. One, because Apple does business with a lot of different companies, and Apple's business is similar to a lot of different companies. So if Apple's struggling in a place like China, that might be an indicator that its peers or rivals are also struggling. It also has a diverse supply chain, so the suppliers are going to struggle with that.
Right, it's the chip makers. It's the people that make the components of the phones and the computers and the watches.
And then also it is as simple as Apple is a component of so many different indexes and is a heavily weighted component of so many different indexes that when it adds pressure and then you just look at the index, you're seeing a lot of red. And then, you know, there's so much passive investing in today's world too, where people just hold all these indexes. And, you know, if they're seeing pressure there, they're like, oh, I'll just sell my ETF for a little bit. I'll get back in later. Well, that compounds and it snowballs. And so there's a lot of different reasons. Maddie, I'm so glad that you brought up the chip makers, though, because I don't think it's the hottest of takes, because I think a lot of people started talking about this yesterday. But, you know, I think my point about the chip makers would be to flip it back on what we saw with the reaction to the profit warnings. We really, I think, saw this coming. Over the past month and a half, really, I can think of since December, since the start of December, we've seen off the top of my head, 3, 4, maybe even 5 profit warnings from Apple suppliers themselves, that those companies issuing ahead of time their own profit warnings. We've seen leak after report of, well, these companies are cutting production lines. They're not adding as many production lines as they thought. They're cutting profit guidance, that type of stuff, from, you know, everything from people that are making memory chips to people that are doing like touchscreen technology, people that are a part of the Apple supply chain, people that 65% of their revenue is coming from Apple. When we see that, how are we going to then be shocked when Apple comes in with their own? Like, I feel like we almost should have had this. Yeah, I feel like we almost should have had this priced in. And I wonder if we actually did, and then the headline volatility will relieve over the next couple of days, and we'll see people come back in now that the valuation is even lower.
I don't know. But another thing I want to mention is that even if you're not an investor in Apple, like a direct investor, you don't own shares, you might have Apple in your retirement fund, like in a mutual fund.
Great point.
So look at your 401k. And that could have taken a hit yesterday.
Yeah, or don't.
Or you just like don't even, you know, sometimes it's better, you're right, not to look at it. But like keep that in mind when like, because Apple like is held in so many mutual funds. And mutual funds are a popular 401k investment property. That
is a great point.
That even if you don't directly invest in Apple, you may be invested in Apple through your retirement fund.
And that, I think, speaks to the reason why a Good Morning America is covering it, because this does affect a lot more people and probably more people than those people realize themselves. So, yeah, in mid-December, I was just telling my mom, like, just don't even bother checking the 401k. No. It's not worth it. You're not retiring anytime soon. So
just, you know, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. She's retiring, you know, not anytime soon.
Yes.
She has time to recover and it'll be fine. Anyways.
We're going to move on to our last story on that note, which is this also occurred on Thursday, and this brought some bullish sentiment into a different industry as the tech world was panicking about Apple. The biotech world was very excited, or at least
bullish.
I feel
like it's also been a little bit since we've had some big biotech news.
Definitely a while since a major one like this has happened.
News, yeah.
This is real, real major. Thursday morning, we heard that Bristol Myers Squibb is going to buy cancer treatment specialist Celgene for $74 billion. That represents $102.43 per share, which is about a 54% premium to Celgene's closing price on Wednesday, which before the deal was announced. And the deal is going to consist of about $50 per share in cash and the rest in Bristol Myers stock. The two companies had reportedly been in talks at various times in the past, and that's according to Bristol Myers CEO Giovanni Caforio. But this time the conversation about a deal began in September. So put it together relatively quick. Caforio said, quote, "We have two really strong businesses coming together. It creates a leading company with a very strong story." He will remain the chairman and chief executive of Bristol Myers after the merger, and two of Celgene's board members will join the Bristol board. The combined company is going to have more than $1 billion in annual sales across 9 products, notably Bristol Myers cardiovascular drug, Eliquis, I believe is how you say it.
Okay.
It's cancer immunotherapy drugs, Opdivo and Yervoy, and Celgene's Revlimid for multiple myeloma and other cancers. Celgene investors might also be eligible for another $9 per share if 3 of its late stage products get approval in time. So Celgene, one of the big 3 or 4 research-based biotechs. It's interesting because those companies tend to go on the hunt for even smaller research-based biotech firms to inspire their own growth. So to see, you know, the even bigger kind of consumer goods and drug company come in and snag one of the big three or four is interesting, and that led to gains in the Gileads of the world. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting story breaking on the same day as Apple. We saw, you know, as a lot of those other stocks got pounded, as you said, we saw the biotech names in the green. And I think the big thing here is, are the shareholders going to approve it, and is the government going to give it the okay as it currently stands? Yeah. So big story to watch going forward. All of a sudden, we have a massive $74 billion merger here in the first days of 2019.
Right off the bat.
So when we're looking back in 12 months at the biggest mergers of 2019,
we have to remember
that this happened in very early January. I think that's going to go ahead and do it for us today, though. Reminder, you can shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com. If you thought we missed anything, or if you want us to cover something else, you can also check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcasts. Always please remember to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts if you enjoyed the show. We are also available on SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, basically anywhere you can get a podcast. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time on the Zacks Friday Finish Line.